Hello, I'm Kenny Linden with Radio Free Palmer, and joining me in the studio today is Republican candidate for Alaska House District 11, Richard Best. Richard Best is currently a Palmer City Council member. Welcome, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Kenny. Thank you for having me.
Great. So we'll dive right in. Our theme for our questions is the more things change, the faster they change. So our first question: in Alaska, some Native elders are saying our traditional knowledge is no longer reliable. Describe how you think this observation applies to politics in Alaska.
To apply this observation to politics in Alaska, it would relate to the changing economy of our our resources. We can no longer count on the oil and gas industry to make up our budget. And politically, we need to be looking ahead and anticipating the changes in areas that we can grow. And I can do that.
Yeah. Can you speak to any particular, is there resource development or
Absolutely.
Are there other forms
Absolutely.
Of revenue or what are you thinking?
Well, I come from a family of mining and construction, and, you know, we all know that Alaska is very rich in resources. We also have oil and gas that we've been depending on, but if we're going to be able to look at ways to diversify our economy, I think resource development is going to have to be the most critical one.
Great, thank you. Okay, diving into our second question. In your life to date, how have you managed adapting to change?
My approach to change, it has become situational awareness. I work hard to learn as much as I can about the changes that we're facing and how it impacts me and those around me. I would say that I'm very methodical in my process and I don't do a lot of knee-jerk reactions.
Can you describe how you would apply that in the legislature or related to your experience on the city council or previous professional experience?
Sure. I mean, you could go back to city council or in my personal life. But when you're looking at it down in Juneau, what we see a lot of times is, you know, the rule of unintended consequences pops up all the time, where people have good ideas and good thoughts, but they're not looking to see how it fully impacts the entire state. So I think within my approach, from the engineering design aspects of stuff, also with city council, you see how small incremental changes at times can make different impacts, and you just have to be mindful of everything that's going on.
Where do you receive your information? Do you do a lot of research when it comes to what those possible unintended consequences might be, or is it a matter of...
I'm very, very much hands-on. I like to do a lot of research mm-hmm. myself.
Great. And how would you... Are there specific policy ideas that you have that you would like to bring down to Juneau as a legislator that would fit into that sort of methodology of, I'm assuming, making sure that you're doing a lot of research before proposing certain bills that might have mm-hmm. far-reaching ramifications, not just for constituents here in the Valley, but across the state?
Just like the city of Palmer, okay? We budgetary time comes around and we're getting a little tight. We're trying to find ways to find efficiencies and try to find ways that we can pare back the budget. We had a position that overseen the fire and police department as public safety director. Okay. We looked at a way that we could find a little efficiency in that, and we eliminated that position, and it put a little more additional work on the fire chief and the police chief, but we were able to save the citizens of Palmer a little bit more money off of that and still provide the same services.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of efficiencies that I'd like to try to find in the state level.
Was that in consultation with the fire department and the police department as well? Or
oh, sure. Yeah, there was lots of conversations that we had. There was a lot of research. There was a lot of folks wringing up hands because, I mean, it is an essential service, you know, fire and police, that you don't want to have that ripple down effect that would then cause there to be a lack of service.
Great. Jumping into our next question. If you consider yourself a conservative, describe the best qualities and achievements of liberals with whom you've worked, or vice versa.
I am conservative. However, the best qualities I've experienced with liberals is the ability to have a healthy, informed, and thoughtful discussion. I don't ascribe to disrespecting others' opinions. I have found that when I work with folks of the same mindset, we can come to a middle ground of understanding. I'm also a good listener, and I appreciate others' views. Although this does not change my viewpoints, I think the opportunity to address views in a respectful manner makes for sound decisions in the long term. The issues do not come with conservative or liberal views. Addressing these issues will take many approaches.
And how do you think you'll, as a legislator stepping into what is the current Republican conservative majority on the legislature in the House, not a super majority, but the majority is identifies in more of a conservative perspective. How do you view the working relationships that you'll have across the aisle down in Juneau?
Well, you know, being on Palmer City Council, we've had many folks like Mike Molesky himself, Kevin Brown. We've had folks that considered themselves to be, I would guess, liberal. And many of their views I would consider to be liberal. And I think that we've had a good working relationship, that there's been opportunities. You come into those meetings with a perception of how you think that you're going to vote. Everybody gets out there and you get the opportunity to try to change the other person's mind. You might not succeed, but at least there's the conversation. And so I think that's very important in these kind of times right now.
Great. Thank you. And then our next question, as a candidate for the state legislature, do you believe that the way the people's business is conducted needs to change? If so, describe a specific way that that change can be achieved.
Well, I think we've elected people we believe can get the work done in the time frame we voted on. This has not happened in the most recent years, and I would work hard to get the job done and address major issues like the budget early on and so that there's meaningful discussions early. Our voters need to have trust that we can get our jobs done.
Could you speak to maybe what you've seen in the last couple of years with the legislature and why you've decided to run for the House? Is that part of seeing that the budget isn't getting addressed early enough, or legislators aren't doing enough in a timely manner, or what motivates you to run for office?
Well, I think what's motivating me to run for office isn't necessarily, you know, my views on how things are getting done down there in a time perspective. It would be real easy for me to cast stones and say that everybody's just kind of dragging their feet till the very end so that you can just jam things through. And I don't think that's the case. I think there's lots of work going on. I think there's lots of conversations going on. But I think just a different perspective coming from the construction and engineering side of things, I'm able to work on large projects where sometimes the budgets get cut back and you still have to provide those services. So I think I'll be able to take that perspective down there.
Could you also speak, you talked a little bit about this with working across the aisle, but speak to what sort of coalition or what sort of caucus environment do you envision if you are a legislator? I know we've, in the past, we've had bipartisan coalitions. We haven't had that for the last few years, but there has been a movement towards this this idea of a muskox coalition with a few legislators. Could you speak to your perspective on that?
You know, now that gets into more the partisanship of stuff. And I'm not a fan of the muskox coalition as it has altered some of the, in from my perspective, the conservative ways of going about some of these budgetary items. But that's not to say that the conversations still need to happen, you know. So when you say reaching across the aisle, there's actually bad connotations to that for some folks, you know, that you're not going to stand up for what you believe. And I will absolutely stand up for what I believe, but I think the conversations still have to happen.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned with the muskox coalition that it alters the conservative perspective or conversation. Could you describe that a little bit more?
Well, that's the dynamics of politics. I mean, you're very, very aware of it as well as I am. And I'm sure many of your listeners, intelligent folks as they are, aware of how you get those coalitions, and they at times will undermine the majority. And I'm not looking to undermine, I'm looking to maybe have a little more deeper conversations.
Mm-hmm. Do you think seeing what, especially in the last few months with special sessions coming forward at the behest of the governor, and the governor was here in town on Tuesday night at the borough assembly meeting. Did you attend that meeting?
I did.
Are you, yeah. Could you speak to how you think that relationship between the governor and the legislature has been? Either is it working, or is it? Are there ways that we can improve how we come to a budget solution? Or
I don't know if it can get much worse. The way that we kind of handled it this time around. Not to say that I'm going to blame it on the legislature or the governor, but it was a kind of an observation that I had while listening to the governor. One of the things that he was talking about was that he sees the opportunities to combine some departments. Well, how come those changes didn't happen before he asked for the money to fund the budget? How come these questions weren't, or these positions of his about combining certain departments to try to find efficiencies? I think that should have happened first before we went through the budgetary process of trying to fund those positions that he is now talking about trying to blend. Mm. So I think we're kind of getting the cart ahead of the horse in at least that perspective.
Great. Thank you. Our next question, describe your prediction about the makeup of the next legislature. Explain your reasoning and the probability that you will be right.
You know, and when I read that one, that was a pretty deep question there. And it takes a lot of things, you know, that you're just guessing on. But I think with losing the historic background of leaders such as Bill Stoltz and others, we'll likely spend a little time finding ourselves as a body. However, I don't see the makeup changing significantly. This goes back to the disenfranchisement of the voters. The persons the voters choose must put the voters first, and I'm willing to do this and work hard and make sure that we bring statesmanship to the political backdrop of Juneau.
Great. And along those lines, since you mentioned losing Senator Stoltz, Senator Stoltz has decided not to run for re-election for his seat. Do you think, have you been in the legislature before? Is this something new? So do you think that perspective of coming as an outsider versus an incumbent or somebody who's already been in the legislature for quite a few years, do you think that will be a boon to you or a hindrance? Or how do you think you'll work with that as a future legislator?
Well, in the aspect of getting elected, I mean, there is no incumbent in this one. And I think there is that sentiment, not just in our state, but nationally of, you know, kind of throw the bums out kind of thing. Everybody's tired of, or many folks have expressed that they're tired of the establishments on both sides, that they'd like to see some way to work through these processes.
I'm curious when it comes to how you see working through these processes with insight from constituents, or how you communicate with constituents, and or how you see that happening from Juneau?
Well, just as I have done on city council, I mean, you have to reach out to the voters. You have to listen to hear and hear what they're saying. It's one thing to listen, but to truly hear what they're saying. You will also have folks coming down and lobbying. You'll have professional lobbyists. You'll actually have citizens that are coming down to lobbying. You'll have, different user groups, whatnot coming down. And then you're going to have the bureaucracy itself coming in and lobbying you. So, you know, you have to be able to weed through all that information. You have to be able to think for yourself. You have to be able to do a lot of research yourself. So, you know how it is. It's a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm. Great. And I think this segues nicely into our next question. The discussion about the budget has taken up most of the current legislative session. If further cuts in expenditures are to be done, describe specifically what those cuts should be and also what impact the cuts will have. If additional revenues are to be added, also specifically describe them and their impact.
Well, right now we're seeing the ripple effect of cuts right here now. I mean, the borough was having to deal with some of the cuts that the governor was handing down. I'd like to look at the administration. We need high salaried, do we need high salaried oil and gas consultants in a Houston office? We can't balance the budget on further cuts to our schools and transportation and policing and then bring on these folks. There is a market crisis. Hiring high salaried consultants is not going to change that. You know, and with that, you were also talking about how we would increase our revenues. That goes back to that first question that we had that goes to the resources that we have in front of us. We're going to have to start looking at different resources. It goes all kinds of different mining. We also have, with the Arctic opening up the way that it is, I mean, you got tourism, fishing. We're going to have to find ways that we can maximize the resources that we have in front of us.
And along those lines, we've heard a lot about budget issues for quite some time now. And looking at additional revenues, you've talked about mining and resource development. What is your perspective on, I know we've seen proposals around a state sales tax or a state income tax or any other oil and gas tax increases or reductions of subsidies. Can you speak to your perspective on those possible ways of raising revenue?
Well, I'm just going to roll it back into the PFD question. Okay, so we have the PFD that's out there, and the governor is going to pare it back to $1,000. So let's say that's roughly $800 million that is going to be in hand. Let's say 30% of the people put that money away normally. So that pairs back to, let's say, and we'll just go with some round numbers, $600 million. You take that $600 million, and that's $600 million that would have been spent in our economy. Any economist will tell you, you didn't take that and fold it over 7 to 8 times. Now we're talking $4.8 billion that would have been spent, not necessarily all in state, but at least a good majority of it. We can even pare that down and say it's just $3 billion. $3 billion in our economy at this point in time, I don't necessarily know that was the right decision. It would have paid some people's gas bills. It would have paid some folks. It would have given their Christmas presents, kept the lights on. Of course, there would have been a lot of TVs and plane fares as well. But I don't know that we can look that gift horse in the mouth.
In the sense of the way the PFD is currently structured or not touching the PFD?
Just paring back the way that it is going to hit us this year alone, mm-hmm. Let alone, this is some of those rules of unintended consequences. Municipalities like Palmer and Wasilla, they're sales tax based. Okay, now you start pulling that kind of large funds out of the local economies. Now, these are local economies that are now already having to deal with cutbacks like what we've seen at the borough level, and then it's going to trickle down to the city. There's going to be different resources and different services that are going to be pared back. We haven't even seen that yet with what the borough is going to have to deal with. You know, that might impact the amount that they pay for libraries to the city of Palmer or who knows what. I mean, we might see astronomical increases in the tipping fees out at the dump. Who knows how they're going to try to balance that budget. But then now the municipalities are going to see a reduction in the local sales tax that we have. So that base right there, how much it's going to impact Palmer, I don't know that we're going to, we can quantify that yet, but I'm looking for that on the horizon.
Are you're referring to reducing the PFD to $1,000?
Well,
versus...
yeah, as he has done, mm-hmm. And how that would impact us, yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that will change from what, even just a few years ago, when we weren't having the very large PFDs that we've had in the last couple of years, back in the years that we were getting $300 a year or $500 at tops?
Sure. Sure, we've seen that. But, you know, when it comes to folks having that additional amount to spend it at their whim, and especially in this economical time, I think it's going to be a pretty good impact.
Mm-hmm. But, can you speak to your experience with coming up with budgets on the city council as well, and looking, because you talked about the trickle down effect to local municipalities really mm-hmm. having to tighten their belts because of state revenues. And could you talk about how you have seen that work on in the city level when it comes to deciding what resources we or what services we very much need or what things we can go without or coming up with that kind of hierarchy of needs?
Well, Palmer ourselves, we've generally been very frugal. There again, Mike can attest to that. We've been very fortunate to not have taken on boondoggle projects like the borough has done over the years. We primarily stay when we're going into the projects and looking for match money and whatnot. It's from the state. It's usually for water and sewer projects and road projects. Other than that, we've been pretty much able to expend the funds that we're collecting as through sales tax and property tax to pay for our services here.
Mm-hmm. And you talked a little bit about that the municipality of Palmer is a sales tax driven economy. That's part of our revenues. Mm-hmm. On the greater Alaska state scale, as a potential member of the legislature, can you speak to the proposed sales tax or the proposed income tax?
You know, going around and door knocking, I've talked to a lot of folks, and people are not afraid of paying their fair share. And some folks are willing to have the discussion about a sales tax because they believe that will hit the tourists that come into town. Okay, so there's many folks that don't believe we should have a sales tax at all. So you get both of those sides. You also get folks that are not worried about a potential for an income tax, because there again, you start talking about folks that work them on the slope that live out of state that aren't paying anything. So I think there's the idea that people are willing to help pay for a little bit more. There's also the fear, though, that we haven't pared government back, the bureaucracy of government, down far enough to where they feel that it would be okay for them to pay an additional amount. So I don't think we have that conversation of the PFD, sales tax, income tax, until we get down to that level of bureaucracy that we all feel is where we should be at.
Is there a specific department or a specific service that you're thinking about in this, when you talk about the level of bureaucracy that the state's mm-hmm. running on, that you would cut from or that you would renegotiate around budget?
I don't think ideas? There's anything that I'm not willing to look at. I mean, you start looking at, you know, even like DMV, you know, there's different businesses that are out there. They're providing some of the services that we have out there today, you know, tags and titles and that kind of stuff. You know, so there's opportunities there for us to have that functionality of government, the task itself to be done by the private sector at a lower cost. So I think those are the kind of opportunities that I'd like us to look at and reflect across many services that we have within government.
Great, thank you. And moving on to our last question. What do you think is more important, voting based on your constituents' concerns or your own conscience? For example, if your constituents were to overwhelmingly support an income tax, but you personally oppose one, how would you vote and how would you explain your decision to your constituents?
Well, I'm hopeful that the people vote for me because I align with their conscience. I don't see public office as my opportunity to do what I want. I'm a reflection of the people who voted for me. And I think the people in District 11 want someone who will work hard, have ethical integrity, and willing to roll up their sleeves to get the job done. I won't be a legislator that is ceremonial. I'm willing to work hard in our community, in our district, and in our state.
And have you had experience with that on the city council as well? Have you heard from constituents that maybe you had a conflict or differing opinions between what you were hearing out in the community and what your conscience might have?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't have people coming and talking to you that have differing opinions, then you're not listening to everybody.
And how do you think you'll try to facilitate that conversation from Juneau? Because I know we have social media now when it comes to being able to communicate more regularly with constituents from far away, since our legislators are in Juneau the great majority of time. Every once in a while, we'll have a special session in Anchorage or somewhere else. But how do you think you'll work to make sure that you're hearing from constituents?
Well, Facebook is a big one. Emails, you can create your database of emails that are out there and try to get letters out to folks. Phone calls when necessary. Just like at City Council, I mean, my phone number has been published openly since I was on planning and zoning in 2002, I think. You know, so I've never been afraid to sit and listen to somebody, and if they had concerns, you know, of something I was dealing with. So I don't see that changing.
Do you often get calls from the public?
Sure.
Are they usually what's going on currently within city council meetings, or is
you'll,
it something
you'll
that's
get
completely
phone calls
different?
From being on city council of somebody who's got a dispute with a neighbor to who do I contact at the city to get a permit for something or other? Can we, you know, can we burn in city limits? Who do I contact about the kids running around on motorized whatevers to planning and zoning issues that, you know, we kind of lead them in the right direction?
Great. Thank you. That brings us to the end. The time flew by quite quickly, but I want to thank you again. My name is Kenny Linden with Radio Free Palmer, and we were joined today by Richard Best, who is a Republican running for Alaska House District 11. Thank you so much for joining us, Richard.
Thanks, Kenny.